Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. How do you know if your child has developed autism? What do you look for? And how do you raise a child on the autism spectrum? Well, April is Autism Awareness Month. And for tonight's Wellness Wednesday discussion, we're going to try to lift the veil on this mysterious health issue. My guests are Dr. Marilyn Corder, pediatrician and geneticist with the Howard University School of Medicine, Dr. Shanter Alexander, assistant professor in the School of Psychology program in Howard University School of Education, and Dakita Johnson, advocate and founder of Walk One Day in Our Shoes. If you have a comment or question about autism, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Ladies, thank you so much for joining this conversation. Dr. Corder, let me start with you. The CDC has recently reported that 1 in 36 children on the autism spectrum. What are your thoughts on that? And are we seeing an increase in those numbers?
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Harold.
Sure.
You know, we're seeing an increase in autism, and there was not long ago 1 in 44. Now it's 1 in 36. And when we see that, we now realize that there are lots of contributions to that, contributing factors that our testing, our awareness, and as well as just understanding what the spectrum is. So yes, we're seeing more and more. You know, we see that some of the studies have said there's a 2 million total, will be 4 million individuals with autism in the United States in the next 10 years. People living with autism who are grown-ups are now being diagnosed because the diagnosis was missed. So it's increasing on both spectrums and both ends. Those babies, we're seeing them diagnosed much sooner as opposed to 2 years old, 3 years old. We're seeing it at 1 year old, 18 months, recognizing it.
Mm. Can you give us kind of a working definition for those who aren't familiar with autism?
Certainly. So we talk about autism spectrum disorder as a condition related to the brain development, that part of the brain that impacts the person's socialization, social interactions, and communication. So that's language, that is someone who may not understand and process as well as others, depending upon that age group. So, you know, years ago we called it quirkiness or just different, but the social skills and the language skills. And unfortunately, what ends up happening to those individuals as they grow up, they're misrepresented. They are, if they have yet to be diagnosed, the tools and the resources that they needed from 2 years old on were not there. So it takes a lot to assist them, but yet you can still do that. You're never too old to have help and benefit from the resources that we have.
Mm-hmm. Dakita Johnson, talk to me about your experience with your daughter.
Okay, thank you so much for having me tonight.
Sure.
My daughter is now 17. She's going to be 18 in a couple of weeks. And we caught her diagnosis very early. We realized that something was different. Something had shifted with her. And we immediately went to her pediatrician and let him know that there was a sudden change. We were on top of it. We caught it early, and we were able to have access to so many resources that helped our daughter and to this day are still helping our daughter because we weren't afraid of that diagnosis. And we knew that by getting that diagnosis, you know, a lot of people, especially in the Black community, they're afraid of the label. You know, why are you labeling your child? But that label helps, and that label gets you the services that you absolutely need. And at 18, we are still, you know, we struggle here and there, but for the most part, she's in a good space because we have been vigilant when it comes to the services that she needs and helping her to succeed.
You said that the family caught her issues early. Take us back to what that means. How early and what did you see?
Well, she was babbling. She was already at the point of, she was about to be 2 years old to about 1.5 years old. She was singing Head, Shoulders, Knees, and Toes. I was nursing her, so she had a nickname for my milk, if you will. And she was able to say Mama, Dada, Gamma. You know, she had started to do those things. And when we saw this sudden shift, it was almost overnight. We saw this shift in her, and she stopped with the eye contact immediately. The speech, we were saying, what's going on? You know, and we were singing to her, and she stopped singing with us. She stopped the socialization, whereas before she would want to play with the kids in her play group at daycare, or she would want to sit with us and hug on us. But that shifted to her absolutely not wanting to be touched, not wanting to be around anyone. So all of that happened at the same time. And as soon as we saw it, because she went from this bubbly child to a shell of herself, that's when I went to her pediatrician and said, something's going on. We need some help. Mm.
Dr. Corder, do we have a better understanding of what causes autism? I know there have been all kinds of high-profile theories about vaccinations and the like, and there are even more recently discussions about a commercial on television about over-the-counter medications, including Tylenol. Do you have any thoughts about this?
Oh, my goodness, yes. So it was debunked at the association with autism and the vaccine, specifically the MMR. And what ended up happening, once you turn 12 months old, 1 year old, that's when you get the first dose of your measles, mumps, rubella, the MMR. Well, that was the time when we see where children, as Ms. Johnson just said, begin to reverse in their developmental assessment and then and progress in the milestones. So coincidentally, that's when you got the MMR. So it was like, oh, that was that new shot. Now he's not giving eye contact. Now we're not having that, you know, lovable child that wants to hug you as opposed to don't touch me. You know, I just want to go in a corner and stack box and line up shoes, et cetera. So that's no longer associated with vaccines. Now, you raise a good question because there's genetics as well as environmental factors. Yes, there is now a lawsuit and claims that Tylenol taken it during pregnancy has shown some causation of autism. So honestly, there's no single known cause currently. And there's a complexity of the disorder from the symptoms to how the severity, even with premature babies, and some, you know, genetics. You may have an uncle or a father, because we see it 4 times more in males, but we do see it in females. So it's like I tell the parents when I do the assessment for them, I tell them, you know, each child is different with this, and that's why I like the fact we're saying a spectrum, because that spectrum is that individual person's point on that spectrum and where we start in terms of doing what they need and giving them the resources that they need.
Ms. Johnson, before we let you go, I'd like for you to share some of the resources that you spoke about that were helpful to your family and specifically your daughter during the course of her life.
Well, I would say first, the school and the daycares are typically, if you don't notice the change in your child, they're going to be the ones to alert you to it. So definitely lean on them, lean on those professionals, even doctors, some doctors, who will be able to say, listen, there's early intervention services in your area. They will typically be able to give you more information. And I definitely leaned on them when it came to us and our processes. As what I always like to say is that children with autism grow into adults with autism. So throughout her schooling, whether it was elementary school, middle school, and now high school, I have joined as many groups as I possibly can to help me with the process to set us on the right path. To, you know, they have meetings where they provide so much information because we don't have that information naturally. I also joined a lot of Facebook groups and social media groups where other parents of children with autism were able to share their experiences, because the fact is we are the experts when it comes to our children, when it comes to our loved ones. We know everything about them, and our voices are the loudest in the room. So when it comes down to it, you want to speak with like-minded individuals, people who are walking your path, who can also give you some tips and help you to go down the path and not make the same mistakes that they made when it came to their diagnosis. And the most important thing I would say when it comes to finding that tribe is you have got to understand that people are going to grow, and you want to grow with a community and a tribe of people who will be able to support you along your journey, provide resources, and most of all, respect where you come from and respect your children and your loved ones on the spectrum.
And certainly the other resource that we have spoken about for years when we've had this discussion is autismspeaks.org. Lots of resources on that website for wherever you happen to be living in this country. So I want to thank you so much, Dakita Johnson, for sharing your thoughts with us and your experience. And we continue to wish your daughter the best of health.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about autism on this Wellness Wednesday conversation. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call. Dr. Alexander, let's talk a little bit about educating a child on the autism spectrum. As Dr. Corder mentioned earlier, we are talking about a spectrum where some of the issues regarding autism may be very, very slight, and some may be very pronounced. Kind of talk to me about, you know, the kind of challenges that come with educating a child on the spectrum.
Thank you so much for having me, Harold. And
sure.
I do want to highlight one term that Dr. Porter used, which was autism spectrum of conditions.
What does that mean?
So one of the things with education right now, my focus as a school psychologist, is really the promotion of neuro-inclusive environments. And when I say neuro-inclusive, I am talking about the way different brains function, the way we interpret our environment. And so for educational environments to be most suitable and not restrictive to individuals who have a diagnosis of autism spectrum, that environment needs to be a place that is not too highly sensory stimulating. What do I mean by that? When I say sensory, I'm talking about the five senses. So you want to make sure that as an educator, even as a parent within your home environment, that the lighting is such that it makes that child feel calm. A neuro-inclusive classroom, just like when we see the kids in kindergarten after lunch, after recess, the teacher tones down the light and everybody calms down. That's okay to incorporate into your home environment as well as in the general school setting. People don't realize it, but the neurodiverse mind is very sensitive to lighting, to sound, to touch, to taste, to smells. And so sticking with the lighting experience, fluorescent lights can be a nightmare. I am not on the autism spectrum, but as I speak with individuals who are on the autism spectrum, it is their lived experience. I'm telling you, fluorescent lights are loud. Listen carefully if you're ever in a building at the end of the day and everybody has left and they turn off the lights. It becomes silent. So that's one thing that you can replace in the educational environment. Remove those fluorescent lights and start using lamps or lights that are not so sensory stimulating.
Interesting.
There are so many other things. Using more visual schedules as opposed to just telling a child, it can become overwhelming to an individual to try to keep all of that information in mind, although some do it better than others. But you want to ensure that you are creating an educational environment that has repetition in terms of different means of communicating information. So you have a visual schedule. You also maybe have music in the background that will tell when an activity changes. One of the things with individuals on the spectrum, or autistic individuals, I want to use the appropriate language, because we talk about identity. And your identity as a Black person or a white person, whatever your ethnicity is, you want to be referred to as that. And so similarly, there's a large portion of the autistic community that wants to be identified and respected as being autistic. And so that's why I use this language. So that you might have an autistic student or an autistic child who prefers certain textures in the classroom. Maybe the seats they are sitting on are uncomfortable. Maybe they prefer to wear certain clothes to school. The idea is to be less restrictive to what the needs of the individual students or individuals are, and not try to make them fit the box in a classroom, which is vastly uncomfortable to their needs.
Dr. Alexander, hold your point. I'm going to let you continue on the other side, but we need to take a break as we move over to the SiriusXM side. So please stay with us. Devette calling from D.C. We're going to talk to you next at 202-319-7810. We will be taking calls all the way up until 8 o'clock. We continue our Wellness Wednesday conversation about autism. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. We'll be back with this discussion in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. April is Autism Awareness Month, and this is our Wellness Wednesday discussion. My guests are Dr. Marilyn Corder, pediatrician and geneticist with the Howard University School of Medicine. Also, Dr. Shanter Alexander, assistant professor in the School of Psychology program in Howard University School of Education. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Devette calling from D.C. Thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind?
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment to provide another resource. I'm an occupational therapist and then assistive technology specialist at the D.C. Assistive Technology Program. We're housed under the university, under University Legal Services. And we provide services for people with all disabilities, but we can definitely help people that have autism, children or adults. And we provide help with communication issues, vision, mobility issues, hearing issues, and learning disabilities. And we provide device demonstration, device loans, and demonstrate products like apps and software that can help in any environment, whether it's school, work, or in the community. So I would definitely encourage people, if you need to be empowered as a parent outside of the other resources, you know, you can always schedule an appointment to come to us, and we always do our best to help our D.C. residents.
Devette,
and there's a program in every state.
So where can people find this information? Can they find it online? Is there a website that you can provide for us quickly?
Yes, we're online. Our website is www.attdc.org.
That's ATTDC.org.
Yes. Apple, T is in Tom, P is in Paul, D is in District, C is in Columbia, .org.
Okay, ATPDC.org.
Yes.
Devette, thank you so much for sharing that resource with us. We'll make sure that we post that on our website on WHUR.com along with tonight's podcast, as we do every day after 8:30. So thank you so much for giving us a call. I want to talk to you, Dr. Corder, a little bit about, you know, the various levels on, you know, the spectrum. I mean, they can, some of them can be more intense than others. Some of them may include, you know, social difficulty, as Dr. Alexander mentioned, noise sensitivity, maybe it's abnormal flat speech, fixations, and so forth and on. But we've also heard, not just in the doctor's office, but also, you know, we've seen in, you know, popular culture about what are called those who are high functioning and those who may be particularly gifted. Can you talk to me about that, please?
Yes, gladly. And it's interesting, Harold, over the past 30 some years of practice in medicine, as I see my patients with autism, it's like there's a disorder or a disconnect in part of the brain. But I think God has a wonderful way of saying, well, this may be a little bit low here, but many of my patients that have autism are extremely highly functioning in the computers, in mathematics, you know, down to the point where I understand 5 or 10 years ago, Silicon Valley had jobs specifically for individuals with autism because they like coding, they like the computer. They're not going to be at the water cooler hanging out, okay? They're going to be right there focusing and understanding that their brain level and ability is way beyond. I have a child who, if I tell them my age or my date of birth, they can tell you what day of the week it was. You know, some spectacular things. You know, they call it, type of brain that you hear about savant. And that's where they may be a little, you know, awkward and limited and tactile stimulate. They have to always have something in their hand, popping something or touching something or touching your face. But they do extraordinary things.
Yeah, indeed. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Felicia, calling from College Park. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, good evening. How's everybody doing today?
Just fine, thanks.
Great. I'm just calling in because I am a mother of a 7-year-old black daughter who has autism. She was diagnosed early, and a lot of I connected with resources to determine what was the best channel I needed to go through to help her, and a lot of people recommend going through 2 major institutions within the DMV area for diagnosis. So I went through Kennedy Krieger, and I knew connecting with Kennedy Krieger would allow me to be connected to resources that they provide. So they were great. We're still working with them in different dimensions, OT, speech groups, social groups. We did the early intervention through infant and toddler with PG County. Then she transitioned to our early childhood center, and now she's at an elementary school that does have an autism program. But that program, upon her starting, I didn't like what I saw. And I felt like they were putting her in a one-size-fits-all. Mm-hmm. And with autism, you have some students have some strengths in some areas they need a bit more support. So I actually hired an advocate, Dr. Jackson, who's awesome, and she's in general ed with special ed support. Because the things that I saw she was excelling in, if I would have had her in that autism program, it would not have helped to push her. It seemed like they all kept these students doing the same thing, and she has the ability. And one thing with the pandemic and teacher deficit, special education is struggling.
Yeah.
It's struggling.
Yeah.
And it's sad when you're seeing what's happening, because there everything, when I came back to push back about what about this for my daughter, we don't have the resources, we don't have the teachers. Even me trying to get her summer school, because obviously there's areas she's behind in, they're like, she doesn't qualify. She doesn't qualify for ESY because she's too advanced, but there's other students that qualify for summer school because they have more challenges than she does, but she does have an IEP. So her teacher said, well, she's one of those students that will fall through the cracks. And it's sad to hear these things. So I'm going through tutoring through BookNook.
Yeah.
Programs through Kenny Krieger to help her.
Well, Felicia, thank you so much for sharing your struggle and the challenges that you are having. And we hope that she continues, you know, to to have a healthy process. And it's good to hear that she has a mother who is on top of things. So I appreciate your phone call. And to her point, Dr. Alexander, one of the things that we have heard on this program for years, whether it has to do with children that are on the autism spectrum or who may have other kinds of educational issues, is that school systems across the country are saying exactly what Felicia was just sharing with us, is that they don't have the resources, they don't have the teachers for this kind of specialized education that requires a great deal of attention.
Yes. So right now, part of the educational classification process is school psychology, right? So we as school psychologists, we are the ones doing the evaluations and ensuring that students are receiving classifications for special education. Some of us specialize with autism. But we're in there's a shortage right now.
Yes.
And so I think it's really a systemic shortage, particularly after the pandemic. I'm telling you, I can't tell you the number of calls that I receive for evaluation. So it would start there. If there's anybody listening out there who is interested in special education, providing specialized and individualized services and supports, please find a program. There are lots of scholarships that are available, but it's starting with their personnel who are just not available to do the job. Secondly, regarding resources, there is a cry out for the federal government to put more funding into special education and classification for those individualized services. And so that's a recurrent call. The resources are really limited and stretched thin. But definitely, we are advocating that these things expand throughout. And as parents, don't be afraid to ask for what you need for your child. That's also very important. Mm.
Dr. Corder, you mentioned earlier about adults who were diagnosed late, where there may be particular personality quirks, but not something that during the adolescent development of that child perhaps was not enough to, to have them, tested. They may have had unique personality quirks. I think, one of the, most high profile adults that we've heard from of late who is autistic is Elon Musk, for example. And so what happens and how might someone be tested, and what are they looking for when you're talking about testing an adult? Are there just certain things that they may not necessarily connect with?
So, the grown-ups that have been missed, and there are thousands, they've been missed because, unlike ADHD, when you have a person who's active and disruptive, et cetera, they get the attention. Oh, something's wrong with Johnny. She's this, she's that. But a person with autism who matriculates through, quiet, nice, stays to himself, not making a scene, but when you talk to them, we all have known those that were a little different, a little quirky, a little to themselves, and they make it through, they graduated, may not have gone to college, but that's okay. But they had that little thing about gadgets, and they had that little thing about building and with the hands and doing a few things that they could do well, and be it trade school or be it college or not college, but they had that creativity. So what ends up happening when you talk to them, they may repeat the whole thing you said and say the answer. It's almost like they have adjusted, and whomever and wherever they grew up and the teachers, they have adjusted to the point they slip by. So what happens? We're diagnosing them. Guess what? As we diagnose the children. So some of this is genetic. So, you know, the father, I had one family that we diagnosed the child at 18 months, and each time the parents would come into the office, the father's, he doesn't engage. He's there because the mother's making him come, but he's on his phone, he's playing games, et cetera. And then he says to us, well, I was like that too.
Mm.
And we know that. And I have friends and relatives, et cetera, that, you know, whomever, they had it a little bit, but they were able to get past and get by. But now we're more aware. And the stigma is gone, or it should be. And I love Dr. Alexander, as she said, you know, we need to speak about it. We need to come out. Like D.L. Hughley, his child has autism. There are lots of folks who were local celebrities, and they will tell you about their experience. And the more we share that information, the more empowered we are in the community empowerment of a person on the spectrum. Because they just need what they sometimes don't get, and they need the resources and the attention and the respect.
But when we talk about testing in adults, what is it that the tests reveal? For example, we talk about, you know, if you're being tested for prostate cancer, okay, we know what those tests look like. If you're being tested for diabetes, we know what those tests look like. But when you're testing someone for autism, particularly in adults, I don't think a lot of people are really familiar with, is it a blood test? Is it a questionnaire? Is it sitting down with perhaps someone like, Dr. Alexander? Is it physiological? Is it psychiatric? Is it psychological?
Great question. And you know what's interesting? As we know, there's no treatment, but even when you have a person who is already past adolescence, it's going back history. I call it clinical history. It's seeing how they matriculated and where they are then. And that you put all of that together with an experienced professional, and you come out with that person being on the spectrum.
So I can also jump in here.
Yeah, please do. Go right ahead. Yeah, because I want to know what kind of professional.
Yes, yes. So I mean, you have psychologists who specialize in this area, like I do, as well as whether medical practitioners or otherwise. So an individual right now, the criteria for autism actually includes a statement that says when we ask for those clinical interviews, talks about whether you are experiencing those symptoms now or by history.
Right.
So as we grow over the years, we change, we evolve, we learn to change our behaviors and adapt. So the individual, the adult who has autism, will be able to tell you what life was like, how they experienced the world from childhood into adolescence, into adulthood. The behaviors that people refer to as maybe awkward might not be the term that an individual who is autistic will use. You will hear individuals tell you, and I learned so much from my clients, they will tell you, I have to talk myself through a situation. For neurotypicals, we walk into a situation, we see a stranger, we say hello, and we approach them if we want to talk with them. An autistic individual or someone on the spectrum will say, I literally have to say to myself, what should I do here? Do I want to talk to that person? And then they will walk through the steps of what needs to be done if you initiate an interaction. Most of this information is done through clinical interview, as Dr. Porter said. Basically, you telling your story from earliest recollection to today, how you handle social situations, how you handle language, how you handle sensory processing, your food preferences. So there's also some psychological testing that comes into play, which a psychologist would have to provide for you. So in a nutshell, I'm hoping I've given you an overview because it's quite a bit. In a nutshell, that clinical interview part of the evaluation is most important to us as professionals.
But not to belabor the point, but we all have known people, for example, who are extremely shy.
Yes.
Okay. Is that a form of autism or not? We have known people. I mean, because we know people who don't like people.
Right.
Okay.
Uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, we have some people who are uncomfortable, and then we just have people who don't like them.
We just don't like being around a whole lot of people who don't.
We have some people who may be less affectionate than others.
Right. That's right.
Poor eye contact. Right.
Sometimes they lack facial expression. When you say something that they should be sad about, they kind of look at you. So that, I call it emotional. They don't really have the emotion that you would expect. And like Dr. Alexander, all throughout the years, they've kind of learned appropriate behavior. You're supposed to say this, you're supposed to say that. And I love her example. They have to walk through, kind of talk themselves, and do what they feel over the years has been acceptable. But when you really begin to have a conversation with them, Harold, it's like, wait a minute, how deep is this conversation, or is it just on the shallow? Because this is how they've been able to be accepted. So that socialization delay is still there. It's just that they are in their own world of comfort. And that's why even when they have relationships, et cetera, they may not feel as well. I have a young lady whose boyfriend just got diagnosed as autism. And all these years, and he does computers and coding, and she just said, I can't take it because, he doesn't feel, and when I tell him something, I'm sad, and it's like, okay, and it's like he's trying, but she said it's just not there, so he just got diagnosed. All these years, he's in his 30s, and successful, went to college, but never had to have that interpersonal relationship assessment.
Yeah, and I think those kinds of conversations are really important, because I think you have to figure out how I'm trying to even figure out how to pose this issue, because it's not even a question, but you may have some families that have a really strong grip on not emotionally reacting to things, where you may have had families that teach their children how to be calm in the face of emotional issues, traumatic issues. These are the ones who may be considered cool under pressure. But you have other families that really react very, very emotionally. I come from a very emotional family. Mm-hmm. But now, even in the wake of this conversation, should those adults who do not necessarily, have expansive emotional reaction to things, is that just the way I was raised, or should we now wonder, do I need to be tested?
I almost say,
twofold. You have social communication, which is where the emotional responsiveness and reciprocity comes, and then you have that other component, which is restricted and repetitive behaviors.
Right.
So it's not just social communication, how you manage emotion, how you interact with others. It is also restricted and repetitive behaviors. And many people will recognize that as maybe needing to, maybe hand flapping or spinning. But those repeated and repetitive behaviors are also in thought processes, right? Are you able to transition from one activity to another with ease? Or do you have a ritual that you have to follow? For example, I had one client who had to do everything in threes, okay? Everything had to happen in threes, including the individual had two children, and one day the younger child said, why did you have me? Was it that you needed to have three? I mean, it sounds out of this world to us. But the reality is that it's a combination. It's not just the emotional part of it and the social communication. You must also have those repeated and repetitive behaviors, those rituals and routines that are inflexible. Those two components put together might be indicative that then requires some further evaluation.
Dr. Corder, you were going to say.
Yes, and often they're moving, their hands, they're grabbing their arm, they may be squeezing their arm as if they're checking for something that is not so overt. That, the hand flappy may be gone, but the grown-up may be able, and they're just holding their hands, like hand-wrenching, or just holding their hand and talking or rocking a tad bit. So some of my, colleagues, especially, well, matter of fact, my son is a psychologist, he said they're like robots. They're there, but they may not have the emotion, but they're trying. They may be singing songs, they may be humming, but they're trying. So it's like they're right there at that door, but they're trying to fit in. And what we need to do as a community, Harold, and what Dr. Alexander is doing, we need to accept it. We need to first recognize it, accept it, and understand it, and understand their talents, and not make fun, and not like, oh, my goodness, they're awkward, because they are, but we all have something.
Well, yeah, but don't misunderstand what I'm asking. Uh-huh. I'm not talking about those who know. I'm talking uh-huh. about those who do not know. Mm-hmm. And that's what I mean. Those who have not been tested, who they may be a little awkward, but that I'm assuming that doesn't necessarily mean that you are a super high functioning person who's on the autism spectrum. You may just be extremely shy. You may just be extremely anal retentive. You may be socially awkward because your parents are socially awkward because you have no swag. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are wondering, does that mean that I should be tested just because I'm not with the cool kids or the cool adults?
Well, can we ask your family members what they think about you or your friends? Because
right.
part of the clinical interview also, particularly, when we're dealing with older adolescents and young adults, you want to know what other people are saying, what other people are observing. Because while it might be normalized in your household, when you go to work or when you go to school or you're in the community, people may be observing patterns that you have not observed as being maybe on the spectrum. And so asking other individuals if they observe things is also helpful if you are wondering if you are on the spectrum.
Yeah, because, I mean, I've heard people say about me. I've heard people say about other people in my circle, you're weird, but I love your weirdness.
And keep it up, right?
Right. Yes, exactly. like I mentioned about the Elon Musk situation, his quote unquote quirky weirdness has made him one of the the wealthiest man on the planet.
Right.
I think that beyond the issue that we have been dealing with children and some of the more extreme symptoms that have to do with auditory issues and nonverbal issues and the repetitiveness that we've spoken about, but I think there is this other piece of it that adults who function very well but may have some issues, whether they are social issues, physical, that I think we need to definitely take a second look at. Real quick, she's been on the line and she's been holding on, and I want to grab this last phone call. Lisa, calling from Maryland. Thanks for holding on. What's on your mind, real quick?
Yes, thank you, Harold and Dr. Porter and Dr. Alexander. Thank you for the information in our community. There is a virtual conference coming up April 28th through the 30th, and you can go to autismin.org.
Repeat that again for me real quick. It's called, yes. Say that again.
Autism, N, that's I-N, black.org.
Autism, I-N, black.org.
Yes, and a virtual conference will be April 28th, 29th, and the 30th. It came up on my Facebook feed, and I've been looking into it, and it's definitely something I'm going to be doing, and they'll have speakers and even more valuable resources, especially for us, people of color. All is welcome, of course, but I just wanted to get that out there.
Well, thank you so much, Lisa, for sharing that with us. I'm going to be posting that website on our website on WHUR.com after 8:30. And just a reminder to all of our listeners, every edition of The Daily Drum is on our website on WHUR.com. It's there in podcast. There are resources. You will also see the photographs of our guests, as well as information that they share with us. Sometimes, you know, not so much depending on the type of conversation that we're having, but definitely tonight when we are talking about wellness and health, all of the resources that have been mentioned today will be posted. And it also, it happens every day, Monday through Friday after 8:30. So Lisa, thank you so much for participating in this conversation.
Yes.
I appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Also, I want to thank Dr. Shanter Alexander, Dr. Marilyn Corder, and Dakita Johnson for talking to us this evening. That is The Daily Drum for this Wednesday, April 12th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.